Old person forgets that he is old, that the tendency is to grow young in thought and therefore young in appearance, that the body tends to take the form which we hold of it in our minds, that the law of rhythm works here as elsewhere. Children grow up out here, and they may even go on to a sort of old age if that is the expectation of the mind, but the tendency is to keep the prime, to go forward or back towards the best period, and then to hold that until the irresistible attraction of the earth asserts itself again. Most of the men and women here do not know that they have lived many times in flesh. They remember their latest life more or less vividly, but all before that seems like a dream. One should always keep the memory of the past as clear as possible. It helps one to construct the future. Those people who think of their departed friends as being all wise, how disappointed they would be if they could know that the life on this side is only an extension of the life on earth. If the thoughts and desires there have been only for material pleasures, the thoughts and desires here are likely to be the same. I have met veritable saints since coming out, but they have been men and women who held in earth life the saintly ideal, and who now are free to live it. Life can be so free here. There is none of that machinery of living, which makes people on earth such slaves. In our world a man is held only by his thoughts. If they are free, he is free. Few, though, are of my philosophic spirit. There are more saints here than philosophers, as the highest ideal of most persons, when intensely active, have been towards the religious rather than the philosophic life. I think the happiest people I have met on this side have been the painters. Our matter is so light and subtle, and so easily handled, that it falls readily into the forms of the imagination. There are beautiful pictures here. Some of our artists tried to impress their pictures upon the mental eyes of the artists of earth, and they often succeed in doing so. There is joy in the heart of one of our real artists when a fellow craftsman on your side catches an idea from him and puts it into execution. He may not always be able to see clearly how well the second man works out the idea, for it requires a special gift or a special training to see from one form of matter into the other, but the inspiring spirit catches the thought in the inspired one's mind, and knows that a conception of his own is being executed upon the earth. With poets it is the same. There are lovely lyrics composed out here and impressed upon the receptive minds of earthly poets. A poet told me that it was easier to do that with a short lyric than with an epic or a drama, where a long continued effort was necessary. It is much the same with musicians. Whenever you go to a concert where beautiful music is being played, there is probably all round you a crowd of music-loving spirits, drinking in the harmonies. Music on earth is much enjoyed on this side. It can be heard. But no sensitive spirit likes to go near a place where bad strumming is going on. We prefer the music of stringed instruments. Of all earthly things, sound reaches most directly into this plane of life. Tell that to the musicians. If they could only hear our music. I did not understand music on earth, but now my ears are becoming adjusted. It seems sometimes as if you must hear our music over there, as we hear yours. You may have wondered how I spend my time and where I go. There is a lovely spot in the country, which I never tire of visiting. It is on the side of a mountain, not far from my own city. There is a little road winding round a hill, and just above the road is a hut, a roofed enclosure with the lower side open. Sometimes I stay there for hours and listen to the rippling of the brook, which runs beside the road. The tall slender trees have become like brothers to me. At first I cannot see the material trees very clearly, but I go into the little hut which is made of fresh clean boards with a sweet smell, and I lie down on the shelf or bunk along the wall. Then I close my eyes and by an effort or no, it is not what I would call an effort, but by a sort of drifting I can see the beautiful place. But you must know that this is in the night time there, and I see it by the light of myself. That is why we travel in the dark part of the 24 hours, for in the bright sunlight we cannot see at all. Our light is put out by the cruder light of the sun. One night I took the boy Lionel there with me, leaving him in the hut while I went a little distance away. Looking back, I saw the whole hut illuminated by a lovely radiance, the radiance of Lionel himself. The little building, which has a peaked roof, looked like a pearl lighted from within. It was a beautiful experience. I then went to Lionel and told him to go in his turn a little distance away, while I took his place in the hut. I was curious to know if he would see the same phenomenon when I lay there, if I could shed such a light through dense matter the boards of the building. When I called him to me afterwards and asked if he had seen anything strange, he said, "What a wonderful man you are, Father. How did you make that hut seem to be on fire?" Then I knew that he had seen the same thing I had seen. But I am tired now and can write no more. Good night, and may you have pleasant dreams. Letter 17, The Second Wife Over There. I am often called upon here to decide matters for others. Many people call me simply the judge, but we bear, as a rule, the name that we last bore on earth. Men and women come to me to settle all sorts of questions for them, questions of ethics, questions of expediency, even quarrels. Did you suppose that no one quarreled here? Many do. There are even long-standing feuds among them. 7. The holders of different opinions on religion are often hot in their arguments, coming here with the same beliefs they had on earth, and being able to visualize their ideals and actually to experience the things they are expecting. Two men who hold opposite creeds forcibly are each more intolerant than ever before. Each is certain that he is right and that the other is wrong. This stubbornness of belief is strongest with those who have been here only a short time. After a while they fall into a larger tolerance, living their own lives more and more, and enjoying the world of proofs and realizations, which each soul builds for itself. Footnotes 6. As time goes by, spirits find no names are needed, and this statement is thus not quite correct, or perhaps, is correct only of spirits new to spirit life. 7. This is true only of the spirits who live in the first spirit sphere, or the astral plane. Book goes on. But I want to give you an illustration of the sort of questions on which I am asked to pass judgment. There are two women here who in life were both married to one man, though not at the same time. The first woman died, then the man married again, and soon not more than a year or two after the man and his second wife both came out. The first wife considers herself the man's only wife, and she follows him about everywhere. She says that he promised to meet her in heaven. He is more inclined to the second wife, though he still feels affection for wife number one. He is rather impatient at what he calls her unreasonableness. He told me one day that he would gladly give them both up, if he could be left in peace to carry out certain studies in which he is interested. These were among the people I met soon after I began to be strong myself here. It was not so very long ago, and the man has sought my society so much that the women, in order to be near him, have come along too. One day they all three came to me and propounded their question, or, rather, wife number one propounded it. She said, "This man is my husband. Should not, therefore, this other woman go far away and leave him altogether to me?" I asked wife number two what she had to say. Her answer was that she would be all alone here but for her husband, and that as she had him last, he now belonged more to her than to the other. In a flash the memory came to me of those Sadducees who propounded a similar question to Christ, and I quoted his answer as nearly as I could remember it, that when they shall rise from their dead, they neither marry, nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels which are in heaven. My answer was as much a staggerer for them as their question had been for me, and they went away to think about it. When they were gone I began myself to ponder the question. I had already observed that, whether or not all here are as the angels in heaven, there does seem to be a good deal of mating and rejoining of former mates. The sex distinction is as real here as on the earth, though, of course, its expression is not exactly the same. I asked myself a good many questions which perhaps would never have occurred to me but for the troubles of this interesting triad, and I thought of the man I had somewhere read about, who said that he never knew his own opinion of anything until he tried to express it to somebody. After a while the three came to me again and said that they had been talking things over, perhaps after the manner of angels in heaven, for wife number one told me that she had decided to let her husband spend a part of his time with the other woman, if he wanted to. Now, the man had a sweetheart, a girl sweetheart, before he had either of his wives. The girl is out here somewhere, and the man often has a strong desire to try to find her. What opportunity he will now have to do so, I cannot say. The situation is rather depressing for the poor fellow. It is bad enough to have one person who insists on every minute of your society, without having two. And I think his case is not unusual. Perhaps the only way in which he can get free from his two insistent companions is by going back to the earth. There is a way, however, by which he could secure solitude, but he does not know of it. A man who knows how can isolate himself here as well as he could on earth, he can build round himself a wall, which only the eyes of a great initiate can pierce. I have not told this secret to my friend, but perhaps I shall someday, if it seems necessary for his development that he has a little solitude. At present it seems to me that he will learn more from adjusting to this double claim and trying to find the truth that lies in it. Perhaps he may learn that really, essentially, fundamentally, he does not belong to either of these women. The souls out here seem to belong to themselves, and after the first few years they get to love liberty so much that they are ready to yield a little of their claim upon others. This is a great place in which to grow, if one really wants to grow, though few persons take advantage of its possibilities. Most are content to assimilate the experiences they had on earth. It would be depressing to one who did not realize that will is free, to see how souls let slip their opportunities here, even as they did on the moon-guarded planet. There are teachers here who stand ready to help anyone who wishes their help in making real and deep studies in the mysteries of life, the life here, the life there, and in the remote past. If a man understands that his recent sojourn on earth was merely the latest of a long series of lives, and if he concentrates his mind towards recovering the memories of the distant past, he can recover them. Some persons may think that the mere dropping of the veil of matter should free the soul from all obscuration, but, as on earth so out here, things are not thus and so because they ought to be, but because they are. We draw to ourselves the experiences, which we are ready for and which we demand, and most souls do not demand enough here, any more than they did in life. Tell them to demand more, and the demand will be answered. Letter 18, Individual Hells. Some time ago I told you of my intention to visit hell, but when I began investigations on that line there proved to be many hells. Each man who is not content with the orthodox hell of fire and brimstone builds one out of the mind stuff suited to his imaginative need. I believe that men place themselves in hell, that no god puts them there. I began looking for a hell of fire and brimstone, and found it. Dante must have seen the same things I saw. But there are other and individual hells dash. The writing suddenly stopped, for no apparent reason, and was not continued that night. Letter 19, A Little Home in Heaven. I have met a very interesting man since last I wrote to you. He is a lover who for 10 years waited here for his love to come to him. They said on earth that he was dead, and they urged her to love another, but she could not forget him, for every night he met her soul in dreams, every night she came out to him here, and sometimes she could recall on waking all that he had said to her in sleep. She had told him that she would not delay long in the sunshine world, but would come out to him in the self-lighted world. Only a little while ago she came. He had been long getting ready for her coming, and had built in the substance of this world the little home he had planned to build for her in the outer world. He told me how one night when she came to him in dream, she said that she would rejoin him on the morrow, never to leave him again. He was startled, and would almost have stayed her, because he had died a sudden and painful death, and he dreaded pain for her. Always he had watched over her, warning her of danger, but this time he felt, after the first shock of the message was over, that she was really coming. and he was very happy. He had found no other love out here, for when one leaves the earth full of a great affection, and when the earthly loved one does not forget, the tie can hold for many years unweakened. You on the earth have forgotten so much of what you learnt here that you do not realize how your thought of us can make us happy, do not realize how your forgetfulness of us can throw us back entirely upon ourselves. Often those who go farthest here, who really grow in spirituality, are those whose loves have forgotten them on earth, but it is sad to be forgotten, nevertheless. It is a bitter power you make possible to us when you thus throw us back upon ourselves, and not all souls are strong enough or aspiring enough to make use of the lonely impetus that might help them to scale the ladder of spiritual knowledge. But to return to my lovers. All that day he remained near her. He would not rest, for, as I have told you, we generally rest a little when the sun shines on the earth. All that day he remained near her. He could not see her body, for the rays of sunlight were too strong for him. But, after hours of waiting, suddenly he felt a hand in his, and though she was invisible to him yet he knew that she was here. And he spoke to her, using such words as he would have used on earth. She did not seem to understand. He spoke again, and still she did not answer, but he knew from the pressure of her hand that she realized his presence. So hand in hand they stood there in the darkness of the sunlight, the man able to speak because of his long experience in this world of subtle sounds, the woman speechless and bewildered, but still clinging to his hand. When the sunshine went away he was able to see her face, and her eyes were wide and frightened, but still she seemed held to the room in which lay the body which had been she. It was summer, and the windows were open. He sought to draw her away into there. Perfumed night, which to them was day, but she held his hand and would not let him go. At last he drew her away a short distance and spoke to her again. Now she heard and answered him. Beloved, she said, which is I? For I see myself, I feel myself back there also. I seem to be in two places. Which I is really I? He comforted her with loving words. He was still afraid to caress her, for the touch of souls is very keen, and he feared lest she should go back into the form which seemed to be so near them, and thus be lost to him again. But though she had often come to him in dreams, it had not been so vividly as this time, and he felt that she had really passed through the great change. She still clung to his hand, yet seemed afraid to go out with him out and away from it. He stayed there with her all that night and all the next day, when the darkening sun came again, and again he could not see her. Once the well-meaning friends of his beloved disturbed her body, doing those sacred offices which seem so necessary to the living, but which may sorely disturb the dead. He stayed with her the second night and all the second day. He could hear the sobs of her grieving parents, though they could not see either him or their daughter, but on the second night the little dog of his love came into the room where it lay, the room in which their two souls still stood, and the little dog saw them and whined piteously. The man could hear it, and she also could hear it. And now she could hear him more plainly when he spoke to her. Where will they take it? She asked him. He recalled the time when he had been held spellbound near his own lifeless form, over which his loved one had shed bitter tears. And he asked her if it would not be better to come away altogether, but she could not, or thought she could not. On the third day he knew from the agitation of his love that they were placing her body in the coffin. After a while he felt, though he could not see, that many other persons were in the room, and he heard mournful music. Music can reach from one world to another, can be heard far more plainly than human voices, which generally cannot be heard at all except by the trained listener. By and by his love was sorely agitated, and he also, through sympathy with her, and they felt themselves going slowly, oh, so slowly, along, and he said to her, "Do not be grieved. They are taking it to the burial, but you are safe with me." He knew that she was much troubled. It is not for nothing that over the house of death there always hangs a strange hush, not to be explained by the mere losing of the loved one. Those who remain behind feel, though they cannot see, the soul of the one who has gone out. Their souls are full of sympathy for him in his bewilderment. The change need not be painful if one would only remember that it has been passed through before, but one so easily forgets. We sometimes call the earth the valley of forgetfulness. During the days and weeks that followed, this lover remained with his loved one, ever trying to draw her away from the earth and from it, which had for her, as for so many, a fearsome fascination. It is said that the souls of those who have lived long on earth more easily detach themselves, but this woman was still young, only about 30, and even with the help of her lover it was a little time before she could get free. But one day, or night, as you would say, he showed her the home, which he had built for her, and it was literally a mansion in the sky. She entered with him, and it became their home. Sometimes he leaves her for a little while, or she leaves him, for the joy of being together is heightened here, as on the earth, by an occasional separation, but not until she was content and accustomed to the new life did he leave her at all. During the first days the habit of earthly hunger often held her, and he tried to appease it by giving her the softer substance, which we know here. Gradually she became weaned altogether from the earth and the habits of the earth, only going back occasionally in a dream to her father and mother. Do not disregard your dreams about the dead. They always mean something. They do not always mean what the dream would seem to signify, for the door between the two worlds is very narrow, and thoughts are often shaken out of place in passing through. But dreams about the dead mean something. We can reach you in that way. I came to you in a dream the other night, standing behind and outside the gate of a walled garden in which you were enclosed. I smiled and beckoned you to come out to me, but I did not wish you to come out to stay. I only meant that you should come out in spirit, for if you come out occasionally it is easier for me to go into your world. Good night. Letter 20, The Man W.H.O. Found God. There seems to be no way in which I can better teach you about this life, so strange to you, than by telling my experiences and conversations with men and women here. I said one night not long ago that I had met more saints than philosophers, and I want to tell you now about a man who seems to be a genuine saint. Yes, there are little saints and great saints, as there are little and great sinner. One day I was walking on a mountain top. I say walking, for it seemed about the same, though it takes but little energy to walk here. On the mountain top I saw a man standing alone. He was looking out and far away, but I could not see what he was looking at. He was abstracted and communing with himself, on with some presence of which I was unaware. I waited for some time. At last, drawing a long breath for we breathe here, he turned his eyes to me and said, with a kind smile, "Can I do anything for you, brother?" I was embarrassed for a moment, feeling that I might have intruded upon some sweet communion. "If I am not too bold in asking," I said, "would you tell me what you were thinking as you stood there looking into space?" I was conscious of my presumption, but being so determined to learn what can be known, if sometimes I am too bold in making inquiries, I feel that my very earnestness may win for me the forgiveness of those I question. This man had a beautiful beardless face and young-looking eyes, but his garments were the ordinary garments of one who thinks little or nothing of his appearance. That very unconsciousness of the outer form may sometimes give it a peculiar majesty. He looked at me in silence for a moment, then he said, "I was trying to draw near to God." "And what is God?" I asked, "and where is God?" He smiled. I never saw a smile like his, as he answered, "God is everywhere. God is." "What is he?" I persisted, and again he repeated, but with a different emphasis, "God is." "What do you mean?" I asked. God is," he said. I do not know how his meaning was conveyed to me, perhaps by sympathy, but it suddenly flashed into my mind that when he said, "God is," he expressed the most complete realization of God which is possible to the spirit, and when he said, "God is," he meant me to understand that there was no being, nothing that is, except God. There must have been in my face a reflection of what I felt, for the saint then said to me, "Do you not also know that he is, and that all that is he?" "I am beginning to feel what you mean," I answered, "though I doubtless feel but a little of it." He smiled, and made no reply, but my mind was full of questions. "When you were on earth," I said, "did you think much about God?" "Always." "I thought of little else. I sought him everywhere, but seemed only at times to get flashes of consciousness as to what he really was. Sometimes when praying, for I prayed much, there would come to me suddenly the question, 'To what are you praying?' And I would answer aloud, 'To God, to God.' But though I prayed to him every day for years, only occasionally did I get a flash of that true consciousness of God. Finally, one day when I was alone in the woods, there came the great revelation. It came not in any form of words, but rather in a wordless and formless wonder, too vast for the imitation of thought. I fell upon the ground and must have lost consciousness, for after a while, how long a time I do not know, I awoke, and got up and looked about me. Then gradually I remembered the experience, which had been too big for me while I was feeling it. I could put into the form of words the realization which had been too much for my mortality to bear, and the words I used to myself were, 'All that is God.' It seemed very simple, yet it was far from simple. 'All that is God.' That must include me and all my fellow beings, human and animal. Even the trees and the birds and the rivers must be a part of God, if God were all that is. From that moment life assumed new meaning for me. I could not see a human face without remembering the revelation that that human being I saw was a part of God. When my dog looked at me, I said to him aloud, "You are a part of God." When I stood beside a river and listened to the sound of its waters, I said to myself, "I am listening to the voice of God." When a fellow being was angry with me, I asked myself, "In what way have I offended God?" When one spoke lovingly to me, I said, "God is loving me now," and the realization nearly took my breath away. Life became unbelievably beautiful. Therefore, I had been so absorbed in God, in trying to find God, that I had not given much thought to my fellow beings, and had even neglected those nearest me. But from that day I began to mingle with my human brethren. I found that as more and more I sought God in them, more and more God responded to me through them, and life became still more wonderful. Sometimes I tried to tell others what I felt, but they did not always understand me. It was thus I began to realize that God had purposely, for some reason of his own, covered himself with veils. Was it that he might have the pleasure of tearing them away? If so, I would help him all I could. So I tried to make other men grasp the knowledge of God which I myself had attained. For years I taught men. At first I wanted to teach everybody, but I soon came to see that that was impossible, and so I selected a few who called themselves my disciples. They did not always tell the world that they were my disciples, because I asked them not to do so. But I urged each of them to give to someone as much as possible of the knowledge that I had given to him. And so I think that many have come to feel a little of the wonder which was revealed to me that day alone in the woods, when I awoke to the knowledge that God is, God is. Then the saint turned and left me, with all my questions unanswered. I wanted to ask him when and how he had left the earth, and what work he was doing out here, but he was gone. Perhaps I shall see him again some day. But whether I do or not, he has given me something, which I in turn give to you, as he himself desired to give it to the world. That is all for tonight. Letter 21. The Leisure of the Soul. One of the joys of being here is the leisure for dreaming and for getting acquainted with oneself. Of course there is plenty to do, but though I intend to go back to the world in a few years, I feel that there is time to get acquainted with myself. I tried to do that on earth, more or less, but here there are fewer demands on me. The mere labor of dressing and undressing is lighter, and I do not have to earn my living now, nor anybody else's. You, too, could take time to loaf, if you thought you could. You can do practically anything you think you can do. I propose, for instance, in a few years not only to pick up a general knowledge of the conditions of this four-dimensional world, but to go back over my other lives and assimilate what I learned in them. I want to make a synthesis of the complete experiences of my ego up to this date, and to judge from that synthesis what I can do in the future with least resistance.